had a very important briefing this morning by the Attorney General on local government expenditure. And there was some miscommunication with his office. So instead of him being scheduled to come to us 8:30, he was scheduled for 9:30. And we had a very exciting but also concerning report that the AG gave to us. So our apologies, therefore, Minister and members, for keeping you waiting. But we are glad to be here. We are all welcome back from our oversight in the Free State that we did last week. I was in Tomsburg, which is 30 kilometers from Aliwal North. And when I listened to the weather forecast this morning, they were saying it's -2 this morning in Aliwal. So we welcome the warm temperature here of the Western Cape. Good energy that we have here. To Minister, Deputy Minister and your team, congratulations, Minister, on your new deployment and appointment. Be assured that we, as members of this Select Committee, are prepared to walk the part with you in taking up our responsibilities as members of the Legislature, serving in the NCOP. You would notice, Minister, that in many of the deliberations that we engage on with you, we come with a perspective from the provinces because we are representing the provinces in this parliament. Can I, before we give you an opportunity to proceed with the presentation, indicate that we have an apology from the Honourable Khai. He has been to a doctor yesterday, emanating from his visit to the Free State. We know that our chair is very frail, and the weather in the Eastern Cape did not treat him very well, where the doctor booked him off. He has that. Remember one meeting he was chairing and he had the pains. So those pains are recurring again, but it's related to the work that he's been doing in the Eastern Cape. He did two things. He sent us a written apology. He sent us the doctor's letter, and he also telephoned to his apology. We also have the apology still from Dr. Wouter, who we know has recouped and then was readmitted to hospital again, and he is therefore not able to be with us today. The third apology that we have, honourable members, is the apology from Honourable Lond, and he again has not only submitted a written apology, but also spoke to me about the responsibility that he has, that he is keeping him away from being with us today. Those are the apologies. Honourable members, we don't have an apology from the Minister or the Deputy Minister because they are here with the DG and the team from the Department of Energy. We welcome you warmly. We look forward to the presentation that we will receive from you. There was a third thing that I just wanted to say. Honourable members, the agenda is the presentation. We will engage the presentation. We will look at the minutes of the last meeting. Grace, I can't understand why the minutes that I received were the minutes of the 14th of March. Are we saying that this committee has not met since the 14th of March? My colleague. We've been very busy. So the minutes of the 14th of March that we need to accept, And then, honourable members, we will, under announcements, need to just share with you some changes that we have made emanating from our meetings of the MENCOM. The changes, honourable Faber, is primarily to try and prepare ourselves adequately for the budget debates in the House. So we've changed the meetings of this committee in particular on the that list, because without the committee we find. But we'll discuss that after we've adopted the minutes under announcements as matters of this meeting. That will conclude our meeting then. Can I just check, are there any apologies that I have missed? I don't see the Honourable Tebe. Is there? Oh, he's coming. Okay. Minister, the procedure is what we do. We allow you to decide how exactly you want to conduct the presentation. Many of our other political heads do a political statement and let the GG then do his thing. And then we will engage, we will allow members to engage with you on that. And I hope we will agree that what is important is for us to get the essence of the presentation, but make enough time as well for the members to engage you. And we're planning to release you by 12:15. We in your hands. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, colleagues. As introduced, my name is Mamoloko Kubai, Minister of Energy. I'm not so sure, Chair, if we should start with the introduction of the delegation, or you comfortable. We can just get in, because we've got a team of our members here from the department who are senior managers.
We are being captured because we are African, and in being African, we introduce each other.
Thank you very much. I'll allow from the DM to do the introduction, and then I can speak after the introduction.
Thembi Matshola, Deputy Minister of Energy.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Minister, DM, Honourable Members of the Committee. My name is Thabane Zulu. I work for the Department of Energy as the Accounting Officer.
Good morning, Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable Members. My name is Lloyd Gunter. I'm the Acting Chief Operating Officer in the Department of Energy.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Minister, and Honourable Deputy Minister, and the members. My name is Kamakwini Njenga. I'm the Acting CFO. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Minister, Honourable DM, Honourable Members. My name is Jacob Mbele. I'm the Acting DDG Energy Projects and Programs. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable Members. Tshidiso Maqubela is my name. I'm the DDG responsible for petroleum regulation.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and members, and good morning, Minister and the Deputy Minister and the colleagues. My name is Zamele Mbambo. I'm the DDG responsible for nuclear energy.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister, DM and the Director General. I'm the Acting DDG Corporate Services. I'm Gwena Mahotla.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Minister, Deputy Minister and the colleagues. I'm Abednego Sungwana. I work in the Office of the Director General.
Good morning, Chairperson, Minister, and Deputy Minister, and my colleagues. I'm the Chief Director for Petroleum Compliance Monitoring and Enforcement. My name is Kusetu Onelikete.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Deputy Minister and the Director General and the Committee at large. My name is Louisa Mosame. I'm the Head of Office in the Office of the Deputy Minister. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members. I'm Charlie Fuchin, Chief of Staff to the Minister of Energy.
Minister, can I just say we have the parliamentary monitoring group. We have our support staff. We very often have some people observing our meetings because we are an open parliament. We will introduce to you the members of the select committee once we start engaging with questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just to start, I think we've been in the public space, but I would not take that as an advantage that colleagues might have had. We've been in the National Assembly presenting both our APP together with our budget vote last week Friday. And I note that members were not around. They were on their NCOP week. Let me first start, Chair, by saying we have relooked. You'd note that we have amended our strategic plan that we tabled from the previous one. We've also amended our annual performance plan compared to what we have tabled. Part of what we had to do was to comply with what the AG would have requested us to do in terms of making sure that our targets are SMART, as they call them. Simple, measurable, reliable, and we would be able to account for them. So that's the first thing I want to highlight. But Chair, we're coming before the select committee in realizing that there is more work that we need to do and taking into cognizance that Parliament, both the houses, would have expressed in the manner that they want us to do things in a better way. And we've acknowledged that as the department to be able to improve our work. But secondly, Chair, you would note that we are meeting here firstly in terms of issues that I think are critical for us to highlight before the select committee is the issue around firstly the operation and effective work of our entities. And let me start firstly with the SERF group, where we have some challenges that we are currently dealing with, and I think we're starting to see some progress in the work that we are doing. There's been an outcry both in Parliament and in the public, firstly around the management and the work of PetroSA. I have been assured by the SERF group that we are finding lasting solution into the problems at PetroSA. But for me as well is to say where there's been wrongdoings in terms of, for example, issues of failed projects that we expected particular deliverables and nothing has happened. But then you see bonuses being paid. We've asked for an investigation and consequences to that. But there are quite a number of things that have led PetroSA to be where it is. One of them would remember it's the failed project Ikwezi that was meant to be explorative in nature and give us a particular income, which we did not be, we couldn't see that. So we are trying to utilize those experiences as lessons learned, but strengthen the entity to make sure that it will function effectively. The second area of work as well is around SFF, where we, by the time I got into office, Minister, my predecessor, Komatina Chumat-Peterson, had instituted an investigation around either at that time there was an allegation that the stock was sold instead of rotated, as she thought. Then that report, when I got into office, was before us. We dealt with the report. We received it. That confirmed that it was indeed a sale, not a rotation. And therefore, out of that, we have now started a process to correct the process, what has happened in terms of wrongdoing. We are trying to find ways of ensuring consequence management, Chair. And in that light, you would have noted that during the budget vote on Friday, I announced the restructuring of a SEF group. And because there was a process that had started where AE, the African Exploration Company, will be transferred to Minerals, and then PASA as well will be transferred to Minerals, because these are companies that are dealing with the mineral resource environment. So we're trying to synchronize following this delayed transfer following the separation of the department into two departments. But again, one of the things we had to look at the IPP office in terms of dealing with matters of renewables. One of the things that had come to our attention, Chair, was the fact that the governance model was not in place and sustainability of the office in terms of operational resources was not yet guaranteed. So what we decided is to move the IPP office to operate under SEF Group as part of the restructuring, so that it is able to function effectively in terms of operations, but secondly, it's able to trade very well, because you'd know that SEF Group is one of our groups that is able to deal very effectively with the private sector. With the PPPs, the IPPs being a PPP, we think that it's easier for us to be able to achieve that when it moves under the SEF Group. Others have argued why are we not, some were thinking that we'll establish that as a separate entity. And we are saying with our difficulty in financial constraints, we do not want to expand government, but we want to make it effective and operate within the work that we do, especially with the current work that is done by Deputy President on SOC reforms. As the Minister of Energy, I'm part of that process, and following from that, this is the understanding of how we should be able to do in making sure that our entities operate effectively. Then the next thing I want to speak to, Chair, which is a broader issue, which is also in the public space, that I think is appropriate for me to reflect here in front of members of the Select Committee, is the matters around the Nuclear New Build Program. With the Nuclear New Build Program, Chair, you would have noted that there was a court judgment that found against the Minister of Energy and others, and the court was brought by FLife and others. Now, with that outcome, we have decided as the department that we'll not appeal that decision. We did a press briefing to inform the nation that we'll not be appealing, because, Chair, one of the things that we agree as a department after reflection, we realized that indeed we erred in the process of IGAs. We should have submitted IGAs for Parliament, both and a portfolio committee and select committee for concurrence. And with that, we agreed that one of the things as part of corrective measures is to say, let's look at all the IGAs, because at some point the court had gone even further to look at some of the content to find that the disparities in the content might create wrong perceptions. So we're looking at standardizing and having, though there might be a bit of changes based on our negotiations with our counterparts, but we think there should be uniformity, there should be some level of standard in terms of those IGAs. And we're hoping to start that process by June, specifically on IGAs, because they even they operationalize our work that is currently happening at Safari One and within our nuclear plant. So that's what we would do. The court again spoke on determinations, Chair, that for Minister to issue determination and for NERSA to concur, there needed to be a public consultation. This is the area where we thought that, where we reflected and felt that the court could have erred in this area, but we decided not to appeal. And let me explain. When a minister issues a Section 34 determination, that is issued on the basis of a policy, which is your integrated resource plan. Now, in a process of us developing that plan, you'd know even now, we do extensive public participation. So we consulted the public, and that document is existent as a policy. It's informed by public consultation. There is seriously intense consultation. Now, determinations are issued on the basis of that document that has been consulted. Now, we're feeling that the court currently says we must do consultation twice. When you do the document in terms of policy and when you issue determination, which we're saying we don't think it's a crisis for us to do, but we think that court shouldn't have found that we should do again public participation. But what we are currently doing is to review all the public, the Section 34 determination to be able to comply with the court judgment, meaning that you would have to go relook at them, reissue them, send them to NERSA, and for NERSA to do public participation and concur with us. So that's what the process we are looking at. What the court has done is, when, because the request for information that was done by ESCOM was based on the Section 34 determination, automatically it means that process as well has been nullified. So we are not able to finalize even on a funding model or potentially having a conclusive understanding of the cost of the new Clear New Build program, because that work has been set aside. So for us to come to that conclusion, we'll have to start afresh, do new determination, therefore do new requests for information, compile that funding model report, compile the potential or what we could be the cost, and then compile that report and send it to, firstly, a committee of parliament that deals with energy on this matter, and then submit finally to cabinet. So that is the process that we're likely to undertake, but we haven't started with that. Once we are ready, Chair, with that whole process and how we're going to do it, with almost maybe what we estimate to be the time frames, we'll come back to Parliament to communicate. There's been questions in the public domain whether why are we still continuing with the nuclear and why government wants to pursue nuclear. And I've been trying to explain to the nation that nuclear is part of our energy mix. We currently have nuclear, and for us, in terms of the future, this is what we are looking at. And the issue mainly is around, firstly, if you are to look at what we have in front of us, renewables in terms of wind, renewables in terms of solar, they're likely to be at times unreliable, because when there is no wind, then it means you can't generate energy. But the issues around storage as well, it's a bit of a challenge. We still need to resolve those issues. When there is no sun, it means you can't generate energy that day. And at times, if you push them further, you are able to get, in terms of generation of energy, you can get towards at least 36%. With nuclear, the difference is that you are able to push them to get even generation of energy up to about 86% if you push it further. Now, secondly, it's around the issues of our commitment as a country to a carbon emission, reduction of carbon emission. We've committed to saying by 2020 we'd have reduced 34%. As a sector in energy, we're contributing 12% on that 34%. So we have to do our part in terms of reduction of that. So those are some of the issues that we are looking for. But what we have called in the NA chair, we've called for public engagement, because we feel where we are sitting that at times some of the debates that are happening in the public space could be misinformation and could be lack of information. And we said a public hearing at some point might be necessary, where we bring experts to really focus on the matter and tell us the pros and cons. Where there are fears, if they are genuine, deal with them and alert the nation. But we think that this should be a public discussion where we are open about our intention, where we are open about what we want to achieve, and it can be engaged so that these matters do not be dealt under the carpet. So those are some of the things, Chair, from my side. I thought, let me flag up front before the team can go into detail of engagement, Chair. Would be able to answer questions as we go, but we've got the APP that is before us together with our finances. I must highlight, Chair, would have loved to have more but we do not. I mean, in terms of inflation, if you look at the current budget adjustment, is not even meeting the inflation rate. So we're literally sitting at a point where we have to reprioritize because we must do more with less that we have. The challenges around even meeting obligations of increases in terms of compensation after negotiations with the unions, it's just a difficulty we have as a department. But as I said, Chair, we are committed to doing more with less and understanding the fiscal constraints that we have. So without wasting time, Chair, through you, we can allow the presentation and deal with the questions later.
Thank you very much, Minister. Let's proceed as directed.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Minister DM, Honorable Members. We have structured our presentation into two main parts, which will be dealt with by our Acting Chief Operating Officer. We won't bore you with the background in terms of the existence of the department in terms of its aim mission. Just want to go into the content of our APP, and then the Chief Operating Officer will do that, and thereafter, with your permission, Chair, our Acting CFO will deal with the financial part of our presentation, and that should conclude our presentation, as the Minister has indicated, for question and answer session. So with your permission, Chair, I will ask the CFO to take us through the content of our APP and the CFO to deal with the financial. Thank you. So,
thank you, Chair, Honorable Member. Chair, as the DG has indicated, we'll start on slide 10, which is basically the planned policy initiatives for the 2017-18 financial year. During the 2017-18 financial year, Chair, the department plans to finalize the comments that we received from Parliament on the National Energy Regulatory Amendment Bill, from Cabinet, not Parliament, sorry, on the National Energy Regulatory Amendment Bill, and resubmit the bill to both Cabinet and Parliament. On slide 11, just it shows the alignment with the revised strategic plan on some of the major revisions in the strategic plan of the department. And I'll just go directly to the APP chair on slide 14, which deals with Program 1, which is the administration program. Program 1, Chair, is made up of finance, corporate services, and governmental compliance, which is the COO's branch. Under administration, Chair, under annual target, we plan to achieve an average AMPAC score of at least 2.8 for the 2016-17 moderated assessment by the KPMG, and also the department has planned for an unqualified audit opinion for the 16-17 financial year. And in terms of executive support, we planning to produce 4 quarterly progress reports with detailed implementation of the MTSF outcomes. In terms of public participation or invisos, we plan to conduct 20 invisos for the year, which is 5 invisos per quarter. With regards to our international relations, the department has planned for 18 bilateral intergovernmental engagements during the financial year hosted in the energy sector. These 18 agreements, this target excludes Africa. We've got a separate target for Africa, which is 10 bilateral engagements for the African continent. And we also plan to have 12 multilateral engagements for the year under review. And also the international relations division of the department will also produce an annual report of all the activities for the year. And as per cabinet directive, the department will continue to ensure that we pay 100% of our invoices within 30 days of receipt. With regards to corporate resource management, Chair,
Can I ask you to just help us if you skip the page?
Okay.
To make sure that we're all together.
I'll
because you're already on page 17. Some of us are still on page 40.
Okay, I'll mention the slide, the sample board.
Please.
Chair, as you indicated, on slide 17 there, on financial resource management, it's indicated that we plan to continue paying 100% of our invoices within 30 days. Slide 18, which is fund corporate resource management as the key project objective, we plan to ensure that the vacancy rate of the department remains below 10%. But obviously, Chair, as the Minister has indicated, that we've got a very constrained budget, especially with regards to cost of employment. So that might be a challenge going forward. In terms of quarterly progress reports on implementation of the HR plan, we will produce four quarterly progress reports, which will then be submitted to the GPSA. We also plan to ensure that we produce progress reports on the target to employ 2% of people with disabilities as per cabinet instruction. We'll also produce four quarterly reports with regards to progress made in appointing 50% women into senior management positions as also as per cabinet instruction. On slide 19, which is energy policy and planning, program 2. Now this is the core of the department, so we'll move to that. Starting with slide 20. Under improved energy security strategic objective, the department plans to publish the annual energy balances during March 2018. The annual energy balances, Chairperson, are publishing resources, so we're going to be publishing the annual energy balances for 2015. And we also plan to promulgate the IEP during the current year, taking into account the public comments. Public comments closed on the 31st of March this year, so we currently consolidating public comments and updating the document as per the comments we received from public. And we also plan to conduct the social impact assessment of the IEP during the current financial year. Slide 21. Under improved energy security strategic objective, the department plans to submit a card memo on the gas amendment bill. The bill is aimed at unlocking infrastructure development in the gas space. We talk to both gas pipelines and storage and gas regasification. We also plan to look at the regulatory model for the liquefied petroleum gas, and with emphasis on the rollout and the increased use of LPG as a thermal solution for the residential sector. As indicated in the Minister's budget vote, during this current financial year, we'll also finalize and submit a cabinet memo on the decision on the new refining capacity for the country. And we'll also finalize the recommendations on the clean fuels too. Slide 22. With regards to biofuels, we plan to resubmit the biofuels cabinet memorandum, taking into consideration comments about the extent of the fiscal incentives which are required for the introduction of biofuels. We also will be including in the IRP an update on the carbon capture and storage pilot project. The carbon capture and storage is currently being undertaken by one of our entities, the National Energy Development Institute. We also plan to finalize the gas development plan and initiate negotiations with Mozambique regarding gas infrastructure development. Slide 23. Under policy and regulations to ensure security of supply,
The department will resubmit the CAM memo regarding the National Energy Regulator Amendment Bill, as I've indicated earlier, taking into account comments made by Cabinet, and also will ensure that the final submitted for Cabinet during the year under review. We will also submit proposals regarding the end state of the electric center to Cabinet, so as to ensure that we also finalize in the next financial year the amendments to the Electricity Regulation Act. We will also promulgate regulations for licensing of embedded generation during the year under review. Slide 24. Under project objective bulk electrical infrastructure, we plan to undertake a phased municipal asset management program focusing on revenue management, energy efficiency, or asset rehabilitation as applicable, as the different municipalities are at different stages, so you're doing different projects in different municipalities. Under the project objective, security of supply through additional power generation capacity, we plan to finalize the updated integrated resource plan, taking into account public comments. We'll also plan to increase generation capacity through coal in line with the updated IRP. Slide 25. We plan to increase generation capacity through gas in line with the updated IRP, and we also plan to look at the increasing capacity for cogeneration in line with the updated IRP, and also we'll be looking at increasing generation capacity through cross-border projects in line with the IRP. Slide 26. It's still under the same project objective, security of supply to additional power generation capacity. We will be increasing generation capacity through renewable energies in line with updated RP. We'll also increase generation capacity through biomass in line with the updated IRP. And in terms of the transmission infrastructure, we'll finalize the transmission infrastructure solution required to evacuate power from the DRC over Zambia, Zimbabwe, and Botswana into RSA. This is as part of the Grand Inga Hydro Project. Okay. Slide 27, project objective there is PSP framework in terms of amount of investment, private investment, and market share to private ownership of base of renewable energy. We plan to launch new generation capacity bidding rounds in accordance with the pace and scale approved under the IRP. That's the end of program two, which is energy policy and planning. We'll now go to program three, which is petroleum and petroleum product regulation. On slide 29, where the project objectives and annual targets start. Under this program chair committee, we plan to conduct 1,500 retail site compliance inspections during the year under review. We'll also test 1,084 samples as required by the law. Slide 30, under the promotion of petroleum licensing, we will ensure that 50% of license applications approved have at least 50% BE ownership. We'll also publish two publications of the petroleum product market analysis reports. We'll also produce 12 audit reports on fuel price adjustments. That's the end of the petroleum product regulation branch. Program 4, which is the electrification and energy program and project management, on slide 32. Under project objective, access to electricity by households. We plan to produce 4 quarterly reports on additional households to be electrified with grid electrification towards the 2017-18 target of 235,000 have congested National Education Plan. Slide 33. We also produce 4 quarter reports on building or upgrading of electrification infrastructure projects towards the target as contracted with EFCOM and municipalities. Slide 34. So we produce 4 quarter reports on additional households electrified with non-grid electrification towards the 2017-18 target of 15,000 as contained in the National Education Plan. Slide 35, under the strategic objective, energy infrastructure development, will produce 4 quarterly reports and 1 annual report regarding the development of rural integrated energy centers. And will also approve the implementation plan of the IEC strategy to the ELF. Slide 36. We plan to produce biannual reports on interventions or support provided to municipalities struggling with electricity infrastructure rollout. Slide 37. Chair will produce biannual reports on infrastructure development rollout and rollout in the country for as part of the SIP 8 and 9. And okay, that's the end of program 4, which is the electrification program. Now we move to program 5, which is the nuclear energy program. Under the strategic objective, improved security of energy supply. We will ensure that the amended National Nuclear Disaster Management Plan is completed and approved during the 17-18 financial year. The department will also conclude the nuclear build program governance framework so as to ensure that there is effective coordination between the department, the DPE, EFCOM, and NEXA on the rollout of the program as and when it gets going. Chair will also ensure that the intergovernmental implementation protocol for the new build is for the nuclear new build is approved. Under slide 40. Project objective to improve nuclear safety security. We will submit the National Nuclear Regulator Amendment Bill to FOSAT cluster for approval during the year under review. And under project objective, increase nuclear energy public awareness. We will develop a nuclear communications and stakeholder engagement strategy to ensure that we communicate effectively with our communities and stakeholders. That's the end of the nuclear energy branch, which is program 5. We now move to program 6, which is the clean energy branch. On slide 42, under the strategic objective, implementation of the energy efficiency demand side management measures across all sectors coordinated and monitored. We will ensure that 1.5 terawatt hour of energy savings are realized and verified from EETSN projects. We will also develop energy consumption baseline for 15 additional municipalities during the year under review. And Chair will also finalize the post-2015 National Energy Efficiency Strategy and get it approved and included in the integrated resource plan in the final report. On slide 43, under renewable energy, we'll update the renewable energy implementation report during the year, and we'll also finalize the biogas to energy strategy and plan. And we'll ensure that a functional renewable energy data information system is in place so that you can collect and use the information effectively. We'll also conclude the solar energy technology roadmap and ensure that it's included in the integrated energy plan. Slide 44, still under renewable energy. Annual target, first one there would be to increase the number of procured baseline systems in line with budget allocation. This chair relates to the solar heater project program. And also, we'll also initiate a solar water heater program, a load reduction program through this project also during the year under review. Under slide 45, still project objective 6.3, which is the implementation of energy-related climate change response measures and environmental compliance. We'll monitor and reduce energy consumption in target buildings as part of the energy and climate change strategy. We'll also ensure that the annual compliance report on the third environmental management plan edition is approved. Slide 46. We'll develop the project coordination services for the Danish, German, UK, and other related clean energy programs. And we'll also develop the carbon offset administrative system to support the carbon tax policy. And Chair, that's the last annual target for program 6. The next slide, slide 47, to the rest, these are the final slides. And the CFO, Chair.
Thank you.
For the CFO, GM just alerted me, I think there's a typing error in page slide 32. Instead of 2018 financial year, under the quarterly targets, it's written 2016. So just correct that. Just that slide.
Under the
quarters. On the broader one, it's fine. But when you go into the quarters, it's as for, let's just 2017 to 2018. Okay, we'll allow the CFO to proceed.
Thank you, Minister. On the presentation of finance, slide one, I will focus more on the budget allocation of 2017-18. However, the slide, the presentation is presenting the MTF starting from 2015-16. The budget allocation for the department for 2017-18 is 8.1 billion. The net increase for this financial year is 7.5%, which is mainly attributable to transfer payments. The transfer payments are taking the significant share of our budget, which is 93% of the budget, being 7.5 billion. The detailed breakdown of the transfer payment can be found on slide 4 of the presentation. Oh, page 50, slide 50 of the presentation. Sorry for that. It's slide 48. I was doing an analysis of slide 48 in terms of the allocation of the budget 2017-18, how it's allocated. So from the 8.1 billion, we have 7% as operational budget, which is 562 million to cover cost of employees, goods and services, and capital payments. However, included in the goods and services budget is earmarked funding, which we can't touch, which is 77.7 million. leaving us as a department to operate and implement our APP with 484 million. I won't dwell much on slide 49 because I think the minister had touched on that, but I can just quantify the figures, the amounts on the implication of what is on slide 49. The budget allocation of compensation of employees is 318 million, which is supposed to cover a current wage bill of 338 million, which leaves us with an estimated shortfall of 20.6 million. The implications of that, of the shortfall, is over expenditure, which will then may result in unauthorized expenditure, as well as the limited or no provision for growth for the department. Then on slide 5, it is the allocation of the budget per program. For administration program 1, we are allocated 259 million. For program 2, it's 49.5 million. For program 3, it's 85.5 million. For program 4, it's 6432 million and has the bulk of the transfer payment sitting in that. Nuclear energy, we've got 821 million. Also in there, there's a portion of transfer payment, and the clean energy, 835 million, which also has got the transfer payments in it. Slide 51 is detailing the transfer payment, what makes up the transfer payments, and under the 2018-19, that is the budget allocation for transfer payments. And lastly, slide 52 is the detailed increase of the increase of the transfer payments per each item that is falling within the transfer payments. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. That's the presentation.
Thank you very much, Minister, and the support staff for that presentation. I think we did well. It's 11 o'clock now, which means that we have just over an hour to engage with it. Honourable members, I notice the Honourable Mtimunye, who is from the province of Mpumalanga. Then the Honourable Faber, did you have your hand raised?
Yes.
He's from the province of Northern Cape. And then we'll have the Honourable Mahwebu, who is from the Eastern Cape. So let's have the three and have responses from you, and then we'll take another round after that. Honourable Timunia.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister and team. That was a good one for your minister. That was a good one. Congratulations. Chair, and I just needed to understand, man, I know we're dealing with the APP of the department, but I needed to know how do you deal with this arrangement of ESCOM belonging to another department when you are supposed to be the regulator over it as a department? That's my first question. My second question was around the meeting, the universal access to electricity deadline of 2014 that was not met. But my observation out of the presentation is that you sound like you're going on business usual, as opposed to business unusual, to cover the deadline that you did not meet. What is your take on that? The Grand Inga project, I'm not sure, Chair, if we need to separate a briefing on it, but I really need to understand it in detail. Maybe I should submit a request for a detailed report, a separate report on it. I really need to really educate myself on it properly before I can attempt to raise the question. The question, I heard you, Minister, over the media addressing the issue of the independent power producers. It has been my concern as well. In my view, they are just not transformed. How do we transform that sector and make sure that the radical economic transformation that we're talking about is seen in that particular space, working and yielding results? Mr. In your introduction, you made reference to the court judgment around the issue of nuclear. And if I heard you correctly, you made mention of the fact that essentially the judgment puts the program on ice. Am I correct? If you can clarify on that, and if that is correct, then I observe in your APP for this current year, you still have programs that you're running with on nuclear energy. If you can expand a little bit on it. I'll stop at that, Chair. If you allow me, if time permits, I'll come back later.
I'm sure you'll get time. Before I allow you, Honourable Palmer, let me just say that I thought Honourable Dumunia is going to raise a very important point about recent oversight about petroleum, that we went to the filling station in Witbank, which is an engine filling station, where a black woman is operating the filling station. And there's a number of challenges that you have there. So maybe to say that we won't raise it with you in the APP now, but would want to take it up with you when you talk about the 50% PEE in that sector in the transformation. We would maybe want to engage with the department so that as we're raising the question about INGA, we also, because we're dealing with 9 departments of government, that we can't be specialists on all of them, to try and just get a better understanding of that petroleum sector so that we can make sure that in terms of the RET, that particular sector is indeed transformed. Honourable Father.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, yes, I want to start off with what the Minister, with the introduction. And it first started off with the problem of our solid oil stock that was moved. Now, Minister Tina Joemat denied it solidly in front of us. When I was in the same committee taking her on this, as well as the same department sitting here today, I took it on and I talked about the 10 billion and that we will lose approximately 2.2 billion. And she says it's only rotation. And these officials are sitting here today. There was nothing said about it. It was what the minister said was like, look. Now, I want to know, who's going to take accountability for this big blunder? As we were lied to here in this committee, and I really don't feel happy that ministers can come here with a department blatantly lied to us about this when I knew it was the truth because I had the facts. I would not raise it if I did not have the facts by then. And I know the two groups that then bought the oil at ridiculous prices. So I'd like to know, what is the accountability going to be? Not just for the minister, but also for the people in places that was supposed to look at this oil stocks of ours. I want to know, that is my first question, and I want to answer on that. I don't want a political answer. Then I want to know about the renewable energy resources. We have much cheaper options than nuclear power that's already brought more than 200 billion worth of investment to South Africa. I also want to know what happened to the controversial power purchase agreements that would have unlocked another 57 billion worth of investment to South Africa. We know that is there. The IRP report Integrated Resource Plan unveiled in November made it very clear that its alternative source of sources are there for nuclear and that we don't before before 2038 even need nuclear power. This is the IRP report. Even NESA's chairperson was surprised by this document. The document makes it clear that we don't need nuclear power until 2035. So my question is, what is the rush for then? It should be produced at a pace and a scale that this country can afford. And we all know now that South Africa is in junk status, and those of you who know what junk status means will also clearly know that it means at the rate of how you will be able to lend money and what interest you will have to pay on this. So we can clearly not afford this. So I would like to know, what is the minister's take on this? Thank you, Chair.
Just two matters, Honorable Faber, on what you've raised. The question that you're raising about Minister Chumat Peterson lying to us is very serious. So maybe I could ask you to feed to us the date of that hearing, of that sitting of the NCOP, of this committee, where she made that, so that we can check her. That's the one thing. The second thing that I'd want to say is a general thing to all of us, which we've done in the previous meetings as well, that remember we're discussing the APP here. You are free to raise any of the other questions, but if you don't get responses to them, it is from my position, because the priority is for us to prepare ourselves for either the not so much the debate, but the understanding, because these people report to us. And therefore, when they do give us false reports, we must take it up. We must challenge them. That is our responsibility of oversight. So I'm not saying let's run away from that, but I'm saying that we need to say to them, on this day, that has happened. And today you're coming to represent to us your APP. And it's important, as you've done it, Honorable Faber, to say that in this document that is what is said. But I wanted to conclude it that I found it very interesting that when the minister started, she said, I'm presenting to you the revised APP. Honorable Mahwebo, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, and the energy team. And thank you to you, Chairperson, as well for the opportunity. Look, I've got two issues, really, on one on good governance, and secondly, on sound financial management. Honorable Minister, in your opening remarks, you have mentioned a few things, but I want to focus on two things, the issue of Petro-SA and the issue of SFF. You have indicated on the issue of Petro-SA that there have been challenges, but be that as it may, you have instituted investigations, and there will be consequences. Now, unfortunately, Minister, it is not a perception but a reality that when government departments institute these investigations, it takes very long. The investigations have been running for years. So I want to know, just on the issue of Petro-SA alone, for when was this investigation instituted? And if it's currently underway now, when do you anticipate the closure of this? Because investigation serves two things, really. It's good for your staff as well, just like it is good for the community and South African public members at large, because investigations can either implicate or exonerate. So it has to be wrapped up immediately. It has to be prioritized. So I want to know, when was it started, the process, and when can this process be finalized? And on the issue of SFF, you have indicated, Minister, that the issue of the rotation that you have since through the investigation discovered that it wasn't rotation actually, it was the sale of the stock, and therefore investigation to correct this, in fact you said, I will paraphrase it, a process to correct the sale has been started. Now the question I have this morning to you, Honorable Minister, is what do you mean by that, the process to correct the sale has been started? And can you elaborate on that? And when can this process to correct the sale can be finalized, and that South Africans and they can be taken to confidence that this is what we have done to correct this rotation that later appeared to be sale? And lastly, on the issue of, through you, Chairperson, sound financial management. CEO, you know, the issue of invoices to be paid within 30 days. I mean, there's been an outcry from Parliament that the government institutions must pay the suppliers and service providers within 30 days. You have indicated to us in the presentation that you plan to do exactly that, that all invoices must be paid within 30 days. But my question is, we accept the undertaking, but tell us more. As we're sitting here today, can you quantify and say how many invoices that have not been paid within 30 days? Because for sure, as you plan, you know, you should know by now, you've got so much invoices outstanding longer than 30 days. And what is the monetary value of the total monetary value? So we want to know as members of parliament that there are people or service providers that are owed a total amount of 30 million, just an example, that has not been paid within 30 days, and you have a plan now to do that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Makwedu, just on your last point, we have a rule in the House that if it is a question that relates to statistical information, you can raise it. There's nothing preventing you. But in order to do justice to the answer, if you say what's the monetary value, we don't want anybody to just give you a guesstimate.
I respect that, sir.
So, okay, thank you.
The answer can follow if the department is in writing.
Minister, please lead your team in responding. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. Let me just start with I think the area around Eskom. We'll take that. I note, Chair, let me just say what has been raised by Honourable Mutimuni. Honourable Mutimuni, how are we currently operating? Yes, Eskom is an implementing agent for us. That's how we can take it. We transfer the resources to Eskom for electricity connection, and they implement. We currently literally trying to make sure that we work in synchrony. Between ourselves and the Department of Public Enterprise. I think what would assist us is the process that the Deputy President is leading in terms of state-owned entities reform and how to structure them better. We can say it's not an ideal situation currently, but we think the outcome of that process will assist us, all of us, in terms of the state-owned entities. The issue of meeting universal access, I think DDG Acting DDG Mbele is here, will go into detail, but I think we are definitely concerned, Honourable Member, in terms of our ability to meet the targets. And precisely one of the reasons is because of budget shortfalls. But I think they will go into detail. I just wanted to highlight. We are cognizant of that. Hence, when I opened, I said we have so much work, but the amount we are given annually, it's not even meeting just inflation-related. And part of the challenge is to say where we need to deal with universal access. It's just a challenge, but I think DDG will go into detail on that one. And I'll allow the DM to deal with the issue of Grand Inga, but possibly maybe DM, what we should be able to do is get that just a document that assists members as an information. I think we should commit Honourable Chair to send that information, but she can take you through just in high level what we do. Now, definitely on the IPP, colleagues, the issue of transformation can be compromised. There shouldn't be any program that we run that do not speak to the demographics of this country. Secondly as well, our level of work, and I think this I will link with Honourable Farmer, on the IPPs. The issue for me is to say, currently in terms of that, we acknowledging that IPPs are one of the critical programs, but looking at round one, round two, round three, we do not have sustainable jobs that we anticipated. We saw jobs created at a construction process, but after that, we didn't see jobs as we anticipated. That's the first concern, I'm just saying here. The second one is the companies, in terms of meeting the transformational agenda, we didn't see that. Now, part of what we are saying and what we are trying to engage treasury is to say, shouldn't we utilize our guarantee that we sign as South African government to say, let it be that we ring-fence it specifically for participation of South African SMMEs so that you are able to see this transformation, because it's not going to happen automatically. For anyone to be a player within this environment, you need capital injection. Not all banks would be able to support them. Not everyone would be. So who carries the risk if it's an SMME who do not have a support or a backup to be able to take such a risk? So we're thinking from our side that we should be that guarantor as government and protect the interests of South Africans and protect the interest of small businesses. And that's what we are envisaging in terms of our approach going forward with the IPPs, so that we can enforce transformation. It shouldn't be an issue that is optional. It must be an issue that it has to happen. I mean, that's why in my speech on Friday I said, we shouldn't even just be talking about issue of just BEE, your 30% in terms of requirement. We must talk about ownership. We must talk about those, because they exist. There are black companies that are there that can be able to play. Now, the issue is for us to create an enabling environment for them to be able to play within the space. So that's what we are looking at, hence we're talking about our guarantee program. And then coming to the issue, Honorable nuclear new build program. Yes, following, because we had developed our strategic plan. Following the court judgment, we had to revise what we do. But most of the work that we have put in the program, in our APP, it's what we need to do as preparatory. Because one of the things that we have to do is to give cabinet a final report to say, this is how much it will cost, this is when we will build, and that can only happen when we have done all this preliminary work for a final decision. That's why it remains in terms of our program. But that area as well does not only around the nuclear new build program. There is other work that we need to do. But all the work that we are reflecting under nuclear new build program is what we need to do as preliminary work to be able to enable the country to take a decision, especially at cabinet level. Coming to Chairperson, I've noted your comment on the filling station in terms of need to deal with transformation. We are flagging that as well. I did reflect on it on the budget vote. I think we'll reflect it when you come before the NCP as our policy statement to say we need to see transformation in the petroleum sector. And the current figures that we have do not speak to what we want to envisage. And therefore, we'll put together, I've got CDG Magubela here in the petroleum, I think he can speak about, just to share some of the things that we're picking up in terms of our transformation, but within the filling station, just to give comfort to honorable members that some of the issues we are aware, and then he can share, and what we are trying to deal, how we're trying to deal with them. Honorable Faba, I do not think anyone lied, and I think we are before the NA committee next week, Chair, with the report itself, and it will help with members to read the report. Expectation or understanding of everyone was that it was rotation, because that's what was reported. And maybe perhaps at the time you were saying that it's rotation, it's not a rotation, it's this, they would have gone back and asked. We are getting information that it's not rotation, and somebody could have easily said, no, it's rotation. Until that investigation, and then out of that, because the investigation I'm talking about, the report I'm talking about that is before us, it is a report that was instituted by the former minister. I got it within 2 weeks I got into office. There was no way that I could have done an investigation and got it reported. So she instituted that investigation that said, let's go and look at what has happened. So that we've got to give it to her, that she acted out of the information that was there to say there's this matter. The report is before us. let's deal with the report in terms of the content of it, and I think I would appreciate that we deal with it when we deal with the content. If NCOP is willing for us to come, we can come and deal with that in detail with the report before us, members having read that report in terms of the investigation in the stock rotation, Comrade Chair. So I have no intention, I hope, that because Honourable Faber was saying he doesn't need a political response. I'm not so sure which one is political. I'm a politician, Honourable Faber. So if I lead and I respond, if I don't know which one brackets into the political. But definitely we agree with Honourable Members, and this has been the sentiment that there must be accountability. There must be consequence management, because something like this, it shouldn't happen. But not only consequences, Honourable Members, it's for us to ensure that something like this does not happen in the future. So we have to put checks and balances in place to ensure that we safeguard that something like this does not happen. And you know that we have asked the DG of the department to go and act in SFF, just specifically to deal with this matter, because we understand its sensitivity, we understand its complexity, but we understand its importance to be able to deal with consequences, but to be able to assure us in terms of going forward. Because when we come with a report, you know, the report does not give us, it gives us what happened. So the report, the mandate for the team that was investigating was to say, go and verify whether it was a stock rotation or a sale. And out of that report, it doesn't say deal with the situation in this manner. So that's what the DG needs to go and deal with. Look at the pros and cons, whether we should go which direction and why we should go, and what are the liabilities or exposure for us as a country that needs to be going into detail. So we can only be able to respond to that, Honourable Members, once that work has been done. So it is within us to be able to, and I hope it answers even what Honourable Makwebu has raised in terms of the process on SFF, because that's the investigation. At PetroSA we do not have an investigation. The investigation was at SFF, and with that report and the concluding of the work, but with us specifically to saying, when we come back, we don't want to come back to say, this is what we are still trying to check. We are immediately trying to check how do we correct the situation, but how do we implement consequence management. So that when we come back, we say, this is the action that we have taken as the department. On PetroSA, what we have decided, because when some of the problems arose, what SEF Board has done, started a process with the board of PetroSA to try and understand the difficulties, to try and understand what is happening, engage them and find a resolution. I understand that they were meeting yesterday, they couldn't conclude the matter, they met full day yesterday, they couldn't conclude the matter, I received the report yesterday evening. Now, the SEF board chairperson briefed me briefly to say they will be concluding this week, before the end of the week, because they're trying to find a solution into PetroSA. One of the things is that we've got vacancies that are not filled, we've got acting people, but as well, a lot of things are happening, the decisions that are being taken, we are concerned about them. And as well there, we are saying, where people have done wrong, for example, making a loss of that amount that we have lost during Project Ikwezi, surely there should be consequences. It can't be that something like that, when within PetroSA, for example, you'd expect that you have like quality engineering, you'd have skills that you need. Now, how do you end up with something like this when you say, as an entity, we are specialties, we are specializing in this area of work? So those are the things that we have, I've given a directive to the SEF group to give me answers and give the report. And on that one as well, Chair, we'll come back with the report in terms of that. The IRC report, Chair, and I agree, this is what we are saying. We are going to implement nuclear in the pace and in terms of the price, what we the economy can afford. We are looking at the projections in terms of economic growth. We are looking at how much it will cost. But again, Honourable Members, we have to look at various issues for us as government. If we are saying We need it by this time. What are the options? Are we able to do PPPs like we are doing with renewables and save ourselves the cost? Because if that's an option, then we can go through that option. But we are definitely cognizant of our financial environment. Fortunately, we met. I was part of the teams that were meeting the rating agencies, honourable members, and part of what we were explaining some of these issues. I don't think we are at a situation where, as a country, we should be saying that we. I'm not so sure what happened with the others that downgraded us to the level that they downgraded. We are not yet at junk. It's just above junk. And I think, I must remember the words, they call them non-investment or something like that.
Sub-investment.
They call them that. We are not yet there. And we think as well, it's, and part of why as a country and from various political parties and a message, I think I spoke to some of the colleagues that were making comments around even my area of work, and to say, you know, we're leading to the confusion to the global community. Part of what we need to do as a country, one, is to put South Africa, and I'm going to sound like Trump now, to put South Africa first. It's unfortunately. We need to put our country first. Besides our political differences, we need to put our political differences and say, what is it that we do and say in the best interest of this country? Because sometimes we might think that, no, I'm just making a statement, it has no impact. It has an impact to how people perceive us out there, to how people, because sometimes they will tend, I was saying to some of my colleagues, people will think that what you are saying is correct, and whereas you are really uninformed yourself. But because of the position that you are holding, people think that you are informed. So as well as members of parliament, what we say, we must try and make sure that we say within the context. Let's get information. Make public. You can be robust, you can be opposition, you can be ruling party, you can be whoever, but let's make sure that we do it in the responsible manner. But secondly, we are informed and our opinions and our views are informed in a correct manner. Because these are some of the things that we had to correct with the rating agency. Because they say, but this is what this one is saying. And we say, but this one is informed. This is the reality. This is the fact. It's so embarrassing when you have to sit in a meeting with people at an international and have to correct some of your colleagues. And they say, but why did this person say it? And you can't even say, hey, you know. And you say, no, but I think maybe you're trying to be, you know, diplomatic, because you're realizing that our colleagues are saying things in a public space in a very, very, how do I say it in the right way, in irresponsible manner that compromises the country. So part of what we need to do, that's why I've said, let's be open about engagement so that we can inform each other, so that all of us as a country leaders can speak properly in a constructive manner. We are open to criticism as a department. Hear me very well. We would welcome, because we believe that criticism will build us and help us to reflect better. But let's do it in a, we shouldn't do it at the expense of the country. So that issue is important. The IRP, honorable member, yes, it's our document. We are in consultation. Once we are done with it, we'll come back to the nation to say, these are the projections, this is what it's saying, in as a final document. Because what we did was what we think is what we are seeing. We are still receiving inputs from various sectors, public has made input. There is a possibility of a shift in terms of the document, but it will depend on what we have received as input, and we'll come back and engage. But what we are committing, because we think it's important, we are committing to ensuring that this process comes to an end by this financial year. That is a definite commitment that we are making. The issue of invoices, I think DG will lead. I think this is a challenge, member, I must say. I'm speaking as well for having been a former chair of a committee doing oversight. We are looking at how do we best improve on it. I think we are not an exception as the department. There are weaknesses, but we can be able to give you later the figures where we are standing. But we're hoping going forward we'll definitely, we've put it as a flag for ourselves but as well, I think DG maybe might speak to it, that we are looking at as well that, for example, in terms of putting some of these things, what we want to see is everything that is in the strategic plan, in the annual performance plan, must be accounted by somebody at an exco level. Non-achievement then leads to consequences that we have to deal with that particular individual to say, why haven't you achieved this target that is in the AP? Because every set of target is relating to a particular branch, a particular area of work that is led by a member of EXCO.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, good morning. I didn't say good morning earlier. It is still morning. On the ground, Inga, maybe to also just link that to the issue around the IRP and the IEP, I think it's important for honorable members to actually realize that we're trying to correct some past errors. We do know that today we have the challenges we have around Medupi and Kusile because we reacted when it was too late. So we do need to do some of these things with an eye into the future. We can't start talking about nuclear in 2025. Because this is not a small thing that you do over a year or two. So a lot of these things, we do need to have a long lead in terms of being able to plan and not being forced into particular technologies because we are dealing in a crisis mode. So I just thought it would be important to raise that issue because when you look at the Grand Inga, for instance, that's also a long-term project. Honorable Chairperson, if possible, I think it would really be good to have an opportunity to come and present the process around the Grand Inga because it is a process that's going to require a lot of support from the members here. We've signed a treaty with the DRC. Honorable members would have been aware that there'd been a process around Westco before which collapsed in the process. And there are many interpretations as to why that happened. But right now, this is a bilateral agreement between ourselves and the DRC because the resource of, in terms of the water and the river, is in the Congo. So without the Congolese, there is no Grand Inga. But the Congolese on their own do not have the capacity in terms of being able to de-risk the project. So this is where we come in because we'll be able to make sure that in terms of the first phase, the project has 7 phases. The first phase would be what we'd call Inga 3 because there's already Inga 1 and 2 that's in operation. So this first phase out of the 7 phases is actually the most critical because it's the one where you'd have the most technically challenging work, which is where you are actually diverting the river. That's very technically challenging. It's also very costly. And it's the part where once it has been executed properly in South Africa with the offtake of 2,500 megawatts, all the other projects are almost like steps on top of this one. So once that one happens, the others just become building blocks. It's a key project because apart from the power that it would be generating, it's a project that would be critical in terms of developing and sustaining the Southern Africa power pool, which has really not reached the level where we can trade energy because our infrastructure is not so strong. So that would help us in terms of building the infrastructure. Phase one would be a connection from the DRC via Zambia, Zimbabwe into South Africa. But all the other phases, the different countries that would also be saying they would want to participate, would then enable us to build transmission lines around them. The treaty itself outlines all the stages that have to be followed and what needs to happen in each one of them. So as South Africa, we're an off-taker, but we're also a partner in the project. The key issues around the Inga, of course, is that it should provide energy which would not be more expensive than the energy that we would be currently having in the country. Of course, it's clean energy. It's renewable energy, and would be something that would really give a boost in terms of development within the region itself, within SADC and beyond SADC. This is a project that, when it takes off, we believe is going to have such a transformative impact, because you'd literally have to build a city, for instance, around where the project is. If you've ever been to that site, it's one of those places that I call one of the wonders of the world, because unlike the Three Gorges, those who might have heard about it, which ended up having to displace quite a number of villages and quite a few thousand people, this one is almost a naturally built kind of environment, so it would really be have the least disruption in terms of people. But you'd have to build a city, you'd have to build a port, you'd have to build airports. So when we talk about Grand Inga, we're not only talking about the energy aspect of it, but all the other industries that would have to come into that, whether it's the civil engineering, lots of cement required there and concrete, the steel industry, the transport industry, the logistics industry. So it's really a project that I think if properly managed, and making sure that the main beneficiaries are people in the region, would really be very good for industrialization in the sub-region. But Chairperson, I think maybe in terms of process where we are right now, the DRC has currently got a law before its parliament, which is supposed to be the law around the Grand Inga and the issues that would be governing that. So that's happening there. At a SADC level, we have introduced an MOU that in the last energy ministers meeting in Gaborone last year, which was looking at having a common understanding around the issue of what would happen with the transmission lines, particularly for this first phase. So that is happening in the different countries, particularly Botswana, Zambia, Zimbabwe, DRC, ourselves, so that these are included and processed within the different statutes in those countries. So that's where we are at. But maybe bringing the treaty here and trying to unpack it would also be something that would be useful. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Minister DM, for comprehensive response. Honorable members, on the question raised that regards to sound financial management, particularly in relation to the invoices paid, Chair, I think one can report that in the financial year 16-17, the number of invoices paid within 30 days period was 99.9%. Chair, I must say that this is monitored very effectively and very closely by government generally. It forms part of the performance measure that the government is currently using through DPME across government. So for the last financial year, we're sitting at 99.9%. But the specific question, obviously, is how we have sustained that. We will be able to present how the April report looks like in terms of this current financial year. So we don't have that data as yet, but we can assure the members that we can report on that later so that you are specific, because the question was very categorical. It will be in writing, Chair. And what we are committing in terms of APP from quarter one, quarter four, as this remains our indicator, is to make sure that for each quarter there is 100% payment made for invoices within 30 days. Those are the invoices that have no queries. Invoices that are valid, invoices that have no queries, that maintain and subject themselves into the set measure of paying those invoices. So we are committing ourselves, as the Minister was saying, through ESCO to make sure that on each and every quarter, no invoice should not be paid if it meets the criteria set. So we want to sustain that, and you can see for the record we have had of 99.9% would like to sustain that record and add just 1% and make it 100%, 0.1 to make it 100%. That's a major we're setting for ourselves moving forward. Thanks, members. I'm not sure if any member wants to add. Did Jim Akubela, do you want to add some more meat from what the minister has said on petroleum issues? Who are you, minister?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Minister, DM and DG. Just to reinforce the fact that the minister has set the target for participation of women in the retail sector in the petroleum space. Currently, I can report that it is sitting at less than 10%. That's the reality. And the challenge is basically, realistically, to double that by 2020. And that is because there are quite a number of issues that we'll have to overcome. You can't evict a sitting retailer and so on. But the 20% is, we believe, is realistic by 2020. Just also the participation by Black Africans by volume is sitting at around 15%. And that is also not acceptable. However, I need to say that the major oil companies, all of them, without exception, have got BEE shareholders, and they are all sitting at 25%. Now, I think the question is, what are those shareholders doing to change the picture at retail level? Because they should have an interest in seeing transformation at the retail level and not just benefiting from, you know, the proceeds of their ownership of 25%. So I think that's the engagement that the minister has challenged us to have with them. The last issue I'd like to flag is the fact that there are land issues attached to service stations, because what you find is that the landowner can tell an oil company that I don't want this one, I want that one. And that is one of the challenges that the oil companies have brought to us, to say that we need to assist them to talk to the landowners to relinquish some of the land. We do have a plan around this, and when called upon, we can come and share that plan. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Chair. With regard to the question around universal access, I just wanted to indicate, as the Minister indicated earlier, the targets that are set annually, they are based on cost per connection on the basis of available budget. But what we found is that there are challenges, because the deeper we go into some of the rural areas, the cost per connection increases, but the budget remains constant. But equally, we find that in some of the municipalities, because the infrastructure has not been upgraded or refurbished, some of the money that goes to the actual connection to the house has to go into the backbone infrastructure, which basically reduces the budget available to do the number of households. So those are some of the challenges that we're facing. To deal specifically with the one around backbone infrastructure, we've had some discussions with the regulator, because we found that there is potential for double dipping by certain municipalities, because part of some of the tariff increases, especially tariff increases above the baseline for municipalities, they are motivated on the basis of additional infrastructure and refurbishment. But that money is actually not spent specifically for that. So what happens is that by the time you want to do electrification, you are unable to connect houses because there is not capacity on existing infrastructure. So you take some of the money to enable that side of the connections. And basically, which is in the number of connections in that regard. But there's also the other side, which is basically the fact that we depend on municipalities to execute the projects. And what we find is that some of the municipalities are struggling with capacity. You know, so the projects are running late. You know, and that obviously impacts on, you know, the target for that specific year. What we're doing with this, we've been engaging with COCTA and NISA, and there are areas where we've had interventions. For example, in certain districts in KZN, the regional COCTA has actually employed about 7 engineers that they've actually distributed to the various district municipalities to assist the municipalities in the rollout of the project or to project manage this project so that the projects can move. So there are discussions that are ongoing with the various municipalities, but the budget, the limited budget, remains obviously the biggest constraint in this regard. Thank you.
Let's have you as the last one, sir.
Thank you. One area through Minister that we have identified, which the Minister has also identified, is effective monitoring mechanism in terms of the transfers that are done to ESCOM and municipalities as part of ensuring that our targets are met as per our plans. And what we intend to do, of course, we need Treasury to be involved, is to put in place a mechanism that is more effective for monitoring of the transfers that we do so that we can account properly. I can indicate that at the moment our mechanism to effectively monitor our transfers as per the plans entered into with municipalities and areas is not very effective. That could also affect our targets that we set. So the Minister has encouraged us to try and look into a mechanism we can put in place to deal with that aspect in particular. If you measure the amount of money that gets transferred vis-a-vis the monitoring mechanism in place, it's not well balanced. So we're trying to introduce that mechanism as well to make sure that we don't deviate completely from the target we have set ourselves and also to comply with the target we have set.
Thank you very much. I did indicate that we're going to have a second round. I hope I was wrong, but let me test the House on that. Okay, our whip is also reminding me of the time. Can I then try and wrap up this session by saying three things? The first is that we just come from Oversight Minister in Mpumalanga, where we had the opportunity to visit Kusile. And there are recommendations emanating from our oversight that we will share with you. But it may also be necessary to bring to you some of the concerns that are now surfacing with regard to other oversights that we have done as well. That's the first one. The second one is this transfers issue and financial accountability that the Honorable Dikgale and myself was in a briefing this morning by the AG. And one of the members in that meeting proposed that what we should do, because SALGA is part of our operations in the NCOP, is to convene a meeting with those municipalities that are defaulting. Because the interesting element of the report is that the defaults are increasing. It may be a small margin, but the ideal is that they should be decreasing. And an element of that is obviously the payment of electricity that we also picked up in Mpumalanga, that there are municipalities there that are just struggling to generate the revenue so that they can meet their obligations towards ESCOM. And we had to repeat it to the district municipality that they must do that. But there are serious, when you mention monitoring, DG, that we need to set up the mechanisms through which we can monitor that. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is because we have the Public Enterprises Department, but we have Energy that we are dealing with in this select committee. And though COPTA is there, we are also in one way involved. So we will share with you what the plans are towards that meeting, so that Minister, you can then discern whether you want to send someone to come and observe the deliberations and maybe even, if need be, participate in it. That's the second point. The third one is, honourable members, just to recap, in terms of follow-up, we have said that there's three things that's going to happen. The one is that we're going to have a session where we talk about the petroleum industry and the transformation there. The second one is that we are also going to have to look at talking to each other about the Inga, Grand Inga project, and where exactly are we on that. I know the Honorable Mthebe, who's not with us, when we looked at the MOU, had a very helpful remarks that he made, and we were particularly concerned about the power lines running through Zambia and Zimbabwe, and saying that it's foolhardy for that power to come to South Africa and the people see the electricity passing them and they don't benefit. So we will appreciate that debate, and we'll ask our secretary to negotiate with the officials to see when we can slot in that session. The third aspect that we are raising is the concerns about the rotation, and the minister has generously offered to make information available to us as that process is unfolding. Thank you, Minister, and your team for the presentation. We will not ask you to leave as yet. I just need to do the formality, and then you can be a witness to that, and then leave. Honourable members, we have to now request the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development that, having considered Budget Vote 26 on energy and the Annual Performance Plan for 2017-2018 of the Department of Energy, you are allowing me to report to the House that we have concluded our deliberations on the annual performance plan as well as the budget on budget vote 26. Are there any proposals for this?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I want to suggest, Chair, that we mandate you to present the report to the House as a report that has been fully agreed to.
The Honorable Mthethwa did not speak, but he is from KZN. Thank you, Chair, for introducing me to the Minister and the Deputy Minister. I second that mandate for you. Thank you very much. I would assume that there is no opposition to that. Okay. And I can say that. Thank you very much, Minister. We are done with you, and we will follow up. Thank you. Honourable members, can I ask that we deal with the next issue before us? We had the meeting on the 14th of March. That meeting could not adopt the minutes of the previous meeting because of the rotation of members. The previous meeting was on the 21st of February. So the members that were in that meeting on the 21st of February was the Honorable Hai, the Honorable Ntebe, who are both not here, the Honorable Makhwebu, the Honorable Lond, myself, and the Honorable Faber. So we need to get Honorable Faber and Honorable Makhwebu a proposal from either of you, which I will second, for the adoption of that minute. The minutes of the 21st of February, which was the presentation by the Department of Public Works on its annual report for 2015-16. What I normally do, Honorable Makhwebu, is I look at the deliberations, because the other things are straightforward. We say the presentation was silent about the number of targets and the FTE, the number of vacancies were not clearly and properly defined, specified, the state of houses in Hartswater in the Northern Cape. Then the committee urged the department to deal with fraud and corruption cases. Then the minister mentioned that the issue of separating the PMGE from the department has been discussed by the cabinet. The department noted that there were quite a number of NP buildings in all provinces. The committee emphasized there is a need for all the spheres of government to cooperate, and the committee requested the department to submit a summary of asset value report for the properties under its management per region. Then the rest was just minutes of previous meetings. We're having it as a habit now that our guests are not here, that in this committee we have meetings minutes standing over. We'll note it and we'll address that in the MENCO as well when we meet tomorrow. Can I then, Honorable Makhwebu, give you the floor?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I move for the adoption of this minutes as well.
Thank you very much. In that meeting, I was an ordinary member, so I can second it. Thank you. Can we now, Honorable Members, with your permission, look at the minutes of the meeting for the 14th of March. There we had the Honorable Hai, the Honorable Chabangu, the Honorable Faber, the Honorable Kahula present in that meeting. So again, we stuck there. We have two of the members here that were part of that meeting.
We seem to be very busy, myself and Faber. We don't miss one meeting.
Yeah, we note that with the
very diligent.
We noted. I can't understand where I was. I've been thinking where I was on the 14th of March. But okay. The committee welcomed the deliberations from the department, and the committee commended the department for identifying areas of underperformance. The committee did not take lightly the issue of political heads who are always absent in committee meetings. Members felt that the political heads should divide themselves. I find that an interesting formulation, when they experience clashes. The committee agreed unanimously that a letter should be written to ministers who do not attend committee meetings. The DGG, Mr. Makubela, requested the committee to assist the department with intersectoral contestation. The department conducted a workshop with COCTA, municipalities and other relevant stakeholders. The DGG responsible for nuclear explained the status of the nuclear build program. Oh, that's the same committee that was here with us now. Then, second last bullet, there is a need for coordination between ESCOM, Public Enterprises, Energy, and the Department of Mineral Resources to address the challenges facing the coal industry. And the committee emphasized that areas that have an effect on spending needed to be addressed. And then they looked at the minutes of 21st February, but could not adopt it. We are in your hands, Honorable Faber and Honorable Makhwebu.
Chairperson, on page 5, says the DG responsible for nuclear explained the status of the nuclear building program and clarified the role played by the department. So he did. Eskom NESA in the process. He further indicated the final response for prospective bidders to respond is 28 April. Now, I can't remember that.
So you want us to take that out?
Do you want us to take out that last
sentence? Well, I want to know. He further indicated the final response for prospective bidders to respond, because I can't remember that. I don't know if anyone else can remember that, but I can't say that he said that. And I really am trying to think about it, because this was just as the court case was busy, or just after the court case.
I'm trying to help with the adoption, Honourable Faber, and say that.
If we take
unless Honourable Mahwebu says he did say it, what we need to do is to then just remove that from the minutes.
I think we can just remove that from the minutes, here, because I know that court case was ongoing, or it was just finished at that stage.
And Mahwebu, are you happy we remove it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we remove that. Can we then, with that amendment, get a proposal for the acceptance of the minutes?
Then I'll
Proposed by Honourable Faber. Honourable Mahwebu? Signature. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Honourable members, just the last item that we need to deal with is that we have changed the program. We have sent you copies of the amended program, but you need to now just approve that program. Yeah. Can we get a proposal for the approval of the program? Because you've seen it before, and there's nothing controversial. All that we have done was to sacrifice some of the Wednesday meetings of the Trade and International Relations so that we can accommodate the Department of Economic Development. There's 2 days. Grace is just helping me. Wednesday, the 31st of May, we will now have the Department of Small Business Development, and Wednesday, the 7th of June, we will have the Department of Transport. Honourable Tetwa?
I propose the acceptance of the program, the changes.
Thank you very much. Can we give somebody to second that?
I second you.
It's seconded twice, so that's truly seconded. Honourable members, I don't have any other matters to raise with you. Honourable Chabangu is not here. You would have wanted me to report to you on the reports of the oversight in Mpumalanga and on the international study tour. We are having a MENCO meeting tomorrow, immediately after our meeting of the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations. No, it's on Wednesday. Read your emails properly. We can't have a man go on Thursday. No, it says, help us. You see, that's a problem when you're born on a Sunday. You get the days confused with everyone. Okay, so honourable members, what we'll do is that after we've met with the support staff tomorrow in the MENCO meeting, we will make sure that we get those. I know the report on Mpumalanga has been edited already. My problem is with regard. I haven't received the other one, the international study talk. No, I was supposed to have gotten it last week, Friday. No, let's talk about it in the MENCO meeting tomorrow. Okay, so you'll get at least one for Mpumalanga by tomorrow afternoon, and the other one depends on what emanates from the MENCO meeting tomorrow. Thank you very much for your participation, your attendance in this meeting, and your support. We are meeting tomorrow morning.